My name is Jessica Stern, and I'm the Executive Director of Outright. And today I've invited a very special guest to join me, my colleague and newer friend, Carlos Quesada, the founder and executive director of the International Institute on Race, Equality, and Human Rights. Carlos is calling in from his home just in the Washington, D.C. area, and let me welcome you to Outright TV. Hi, Carlos.
Hi, Jessica. Thank you very much for having me.
It is my great pleasure. So, Carlos, you and I are a member of a coalition that works to influence LGBTI inclusion in U.S. foreign policy, the Council for Global Equality. And one of the things I always really appreciate about your interventions is that you bring up intersectionality from many vantage points, including centering a racial justice analysis when we talk about human rights and LGBTI people. So the spirit of this series is to look at how COVID-19 is playing out on the lives of LGBTIQ people. And I wanted to ask you through a racial justice lens, where and how are you seeing LGBTIQ people of color around the world being impacted by COVID-19?
Well, thank you very much, Jessica. Yes, I think we work a lot in Latin America, and I would like to use the Latin American examples, especially in the case of Brazil, Colombia, or the Dominican Republic. You know, any crisis, including this unfortunate crisis, kind of exacerbates inequalities. And Afro descendants and indigenous in Latin America have always been living kind of the bottom of the social class, so to speak. And what COVID-19 has been doing is clearly to exacerbate those inequalities, meaning access to a good healthcare, access to services, or access to public policies. And I think the perfect example is Brazil, which clearly doesn't have a good leadership, so to speak, in terms of the response to the crisis, but also in terms of having public policies towards the poor. And in the case of Brazil, unfortunately, the majority of the poor people are Afro-Brazilians. Mm-hmm. So the other thing basically that has been happening, honestly, is that the level of violence against Afro-LGBT people has not been stopping with this crisis. Mm-hmm. So just in the case of Brazil, our partner organization, the National Association of Travestis and Transsexuals of Brazil, ANTRA, has reported till mid-April 52 killings of transgender women, 80% of them Black. So it clearly shows that those who hate us are not isolated. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we have other examples in the Pacific Basin of Colombia, for instance, where you know, the majority of those affected by COVID-19 are the poor, / Afro-descendants or indigenous.
Mm-hmm. So part of what I hear you saying is that in the communities that you work with, there is an overrepresentation of people of color and Afro-descendant people among those living in poverty. And because one of the crucial determining factors of health and wellness is access to good doctors, access to good sanitation, the consequence is that Afro-descendants are overrepresented among those who are getting sick from COVID. And as you told me in our preparatory conversation, even if Afro-descendants aren't necessarily going to hospitals in high numbers, they're dying in higher numbers than their white counterparts. I'd love if you would say a little bit about that and also expand on what it means that there are such incredibly high numbers of killings of Afro-Brazilian trans women this year alone.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately in Latin America, you know, the practice of social distancing, even here, you know, it cannot happen if you're poor and if you live in a very crowded area. And in Latin America, Brazil or other places, what's called the favelas, you know, you have 7, 8, 10 people living in a very small place. So it's very difficult for them to social distance. And so it's very difficult for them to, even if they have a positive person in the house, that to either leave the house or you know, kick this person out of the house, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's why, you know, we see a lot of numbers and you know, slash with the race component here. The level of violence, unfortunately, and the, how Brazilians, I mean, Brazil has always been, the level of violence against trans persons in Brazil, trans individuals, has always been like a main problem. I mean, Brazil is the country where that where transgender women are killed the most in the world, so to speak, right? Here, there are two factors. One is that they're like good policies in terms of like legislation. I mean, Brazil is one of the countries where you can change your name. I mean, there's like a lot of advances in terms of laws towards LGBT people. Unfortunately, those advances do not match the culture of the country. So you have, yes, good laws on paper, but then very little implementation. And then the other thing is the level of impunity. Brazil has, not only Brazil, I would say Brazil, Central America, I would say in Latin America, the level of impunity against those who kill transgender, especially transgender women, is very high. So the message that the governments are sending is basically, you can kill a transgender woman and you're gonna be fine.
Yeah. Is there a case that stands out to you, Carlos, when you think about how COVID is wreaking havoc in the lives of some of the LGBTIQ people you work with? Is there a case that stands out that would illustrate some of the challenges you're describing?
Well, yeah, I mean, like we've been working with a lot of our partners working, like Antra in Brazil, for instance, they've been telling us that, which is really sad, that a lot of the transgender women who are like, that they're related to Antra, they have not been able to isolate because they have to eat. Mm-hmm. They have to pay rent. Mm-hmm. So they still have to work as sex workers in order to survive. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that also put them at risk, not only because they're not practicing social distancing, but also it says a lot about the lack of public policies towards LGBTI individuals mm-hmm. in the pandemic. And this, I think this is a worldwide problem, not only in Latin America. I think there hasn't been public policies for LGBTI individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would very much agree with you. And one of the reasons why Outright is running the Outright TV series is because we want to lift up the examples of how LGBTIQ people are falling through the cracks mm-hmm. of the COVID-19 response mechanisms, and also demand government response mm-hmm. and responses from the philanthropic sector that ensure that we have access to services, we have access to food, we have access to healthcare, and that we're not going to die in higher numbers just because we're LGBTIQ. Mm-hmm. And so what I wanted to ask you about is not just about the problems, but also about the solutions. So sure. What's your call to action? What are you demanding of governments at this time?
I think the first thing would be to include LGBTI individuals in every public policy that is being developed to respond to the pandemic. Meaning, I know that some countries like Colombia, Brazil, the Dominican Republic and Peru have like this kind of a small grant for families in need. And they, for instance, in the case of Colombia, they have said, oh, LGBTI individuals could apply for this. But when they apply for that, they're either always at the back of the line or they never get the resources. The main recommendation I would say is one, to include LGBTI people in the public policies. And the second one is we are still being killed. We're still being attacked. We're still being discriminated against. So, you know, the government needs to apply or implement policies to guarantee the lives and the integrity of the LGBTI population in Latin America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the violence that preceded the pandemic is continuing throughout the pandemic. And in some cases, for example, domestic and family violence, it is even spiking.
Correct, correct.
I want to ask you a couple more questions before we wrap up. We have a few minutes left. A lot of us were following the news out of Panama that that the government was telling people that women could go out on the streets Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Men could go out on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. No one could go out on Sunday. And if you didn't fit within that gender binary, you were in trouble. And for those of us in the LGBTIQ community, this immediately sparked fear because we were really worried for people who are transgender. When do you go out onto the street? Do you go out onto the street on the day that aligns with your sense of self and your physical appearance? Or do you go out on the streets in the day that aligns with your legal identity documents? Mm-hmm. And what happens if you're non-binary? What do you do? So can you tell us what happened in Panama? And I understand that this also became a policy that in different forms was also implemented in Peru and in parts of Colombia. But correct me if I'm wrong.
No, correct. I think, and it's still in effect in certain cities in Colombia, including Bogota. And the mayor of Bogota is a lesbian woman, and she was the one who implemented these policies. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't say very good things about the mayor of Bogota, unfortunately. But other cities like Cartagena, Manizales, in Quibdó, they're applying the same policy. And in Peru, it was applied for 2.5 weeks starting on April 1st. But then it was canceled, so to speak, by the government, not for the right reasons, unfortunately, mm-hmm. but because actually for something that reinforces the stereotypes, because women were going out more than men, because women were going to the supermarkets to buy food more than men. Mm-hmm. So there were too many women on the streets. So that's why Peru decided not to continue with a policy. In the case of Panama and Colombia, and this is other countries are thinking about implementing this. Thank God they're not doing it. Is again, unfortunately, it has to deal with the quote gender roles, and I'm using the quote gender roles. Like it would be safer for women. They're not using the excuse is not being like, oh, this is discrimination based on sexual orientation, gender identity. It's more about gender stereotypes. Gender stereotypes. So it was safer for women to go to supermarkets without men. It was safer for women to drive than men, etc. I mean, we are against those policies. And there has been a lot of problems, especially for transgender women and trans men. In Panama and in Colombia. However, and this is something very important, the governments, especially in the case of Colombia, the major sort of different cities have said that they're going to guarantee the respect for trans women while they're in public. The problem is that they haven't sensitized the police. So one thing is what they say in public and what the police has been saying. And for instance, we have videos from yesterday actually, where an Afro-Colombian trans woman in Bogota was walking during the wrong day, and she was planning to be detained by the police, and she was like basically attacked by the police because she would resist their arrest. So again, I think I'm totally against this kind of policies. I think reinforces the stereotypes that we are fighting for. And then it put our people at risk.
Thank you, Carlos. A couple of follow-up thoughts. We're actually at the 15-minute mark, so I'm going to move us towards wrapping up. One is in terms of the resource you shared. If you could send me a link to that video, I don't know if it's anonymized to protect the safety and security of the woman who was attacked, but if it is something that you could share, I'd love to include it in the resources from this video so that people can see the kind of violence, police violence that you're describing.
Sure, I'll send you the link.
That would be great. And then the second thing is, a complex piece, which is You know, what we're committed to is preventing and ending gender-based violence. And when we say that, what we mean is that measures that are designed to prevent and end violence against women need to take a more holistic approach. Mm-hmm. It goes without saying, or it should go without saying, that we are totally and completely opposed to violence against women in all of its forms. And also, we want the definition of woman to be fully inclusive. And we want to recognize that gender-based violence is actually about tackling the root causes of violence against our community, the stereotypes, the misconceptions, the compartmentalization that comes from the gender binary. When actually what we're saying is gender, its expression, its sexuality is a spectrum. And people can be targeted for gender-based violence regardless of the anatomy between their legs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just want to wrap up by adding one point that you shared with me, Carlos, from before, which was that a third solution is data disaggregation. Oh,
yes.
So as we're looking at the COVID response mechanisms, we're also calling on governments and the, you know, and all of the other sort of influential sectors to monitor and gather data based on race, sexual orientation, gender identity, sex characteristics, so that we understand which populations are overrepresented among those that are experiencing the cruelties of COVID-19. I want to ask you to just, if you have any concluding thoughts for our viewers.
Sure. No, I think it's what you just said, and we were talking before, it's very, very important. One, because it would allow us to know, if we collect data and all the special rapporteurs of the United Nations have actually asked the governments to collect data based on race, gender, color, sexual orientation, gender identity, etc. I think so far up to today, in terms of the pandemic, so to speak, all the countries in the world, including the United States, we haven't been able to collect reliable data on how these have been impacted the health of LGBTI individuals. In some places, in Brazil, for instance, they were not collecting data for the first 1,056 deaths on terms of race. So until, like, you know, that civil society organizations were asking, like, wait, you need to collect data on race because, you know, like, Afro-Brazilians are 50% of the population. Mm-hmm. So now they're collecting data, and it's in Brazil, it has been proven, so to speak, how disproportionate the impact has been for Afro-descendant communities. Mm-hmm. What we're working with our partners on the ground is we should encourage our people, LGBTI individuals, to push the governments to collect data on who are the people who are dying, what kind of conditions do they have, mm-hmm. and their sexual orientation and gender identity, if they want to share that information or if their relatives would like to share that information with them. Mm-hmm. I think that's very important because mm-hmm. Something that I forgot to mention, I'm pretty sure you already know, and the viewers will know too, the problem is that we all have different responses in different times to this mm-hmm. pandemic. Mm-hmm. So whereas here, New York and other places already reached the peak, in other places in Latin America, including Brazil, they haven't reached the peak yet. Okay. So I think we are at the right time to make mm-hmm. a recommendation to collect data mm-hmm. all over the world because mm-hmm. I mean, this has reaching out or has hit us in a different wave, so to speak, you know?
I really appreciate you underscoring that. And we're still in the early phases of this pandemic sweeping the world. And instead of duplicating the mistakes that we've made in early interventions, we can learn from them and do better. Mm-hmm. And in the process, we can save LGBTIQ people's lives and many people's lives. So I want to thank you very much, Carlos. You are my fourth interview for Outright TV. And you were a pleasure, very substantive, very, very important work you're doing. I want to encourage all of our viewers to check out the International Institute on Race, Equality, and Human Rights, doing wonderful work. And I want to encourage all of our viewers to tune in for our next episode of Outright TV. Thank you very much, Carlos.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.